Today's section, the mindfulness of breathing, is interesting because the mindfulness of breathing meditation has become very popular in Burma as well as in other countries. And those who practice Vipassana meditation actually begins with some kind of mindfulness on breathing meditation. So you begin with keeping your mind on the breath, or as a variation of keeping your mind on the breath, you keep the mind on the movements of the abdomen, rising and falling movements of the abdomen. So it is also breathing meditation. But in this book, in the Path of Purification, mindfulness of breathing is treated as tranquility or serenity meditation, samatha meditation, and not as vipassana meditation. So the description that follows in this section, most of the description is for tranquility meditation. And the breathing of meditation is taught in different suttas in the Sutta Pitaka, or the basket of discourses. And so the author took a passage from one of the suttas and then commented upon it. So now comes the description of the development of mindfulness of breathing as a meditation subject. It has been recommended by the Blessed One thus: and because this concentration through mindfulness of breathing, when developed and practiced much, is both peaceful and sublime, it is an unadulterated blissful abiding, and it banishes at once and stills evil, unprofitable thoughts as soon as they arise. This is from one sutta. And then the next one: it has been described by the Blessed One as having 16 bases thus, or 16 methods mentioned in the sutta. And how developed, because how practiced much, is concentration through mindfulness of breathing, both peaceful and sublime, and unadulterated blissful abiding, banishing at once and stilling evil, unprofitable thoughts as soon as they arise. We'll examine the translation later. Here, because a bhikkhu gone to the forest, or to the root of a tree, or to an empty place, sits down, having folded his legs crosswise, set his body erect, established mindfulness in front of him, actually established mindfulness towards the meditation object. Ever mindful, he breathes in. Mindful, he breathes out. Here also, we should say ever. Ever mindful, he breathes in. Ever mindful, he breathes out. That is the basic practice. And then comes the 16 methods. Breathing in long, he knows I breathe in long. Or breathing in long, breathing out long, he knows I breathe out long. That is first method. 2, breathing in short, he knows I breathe in short. Or breathing out short, he knows I breathe out short. 3, he trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the whole body. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the whole body. 4, he trains thus, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the bodily formation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. So these are the 4 basic methods of mindfulness on breathing meditation. And then there are 3 more sets of 4 methods each, dealing with the other 3 kinds of foundations of mindfulness. You know, there are 4 foundations of mindfulness, or 4 establishment of mindfulness. Contemplation on the body, contemplation on feelings, contemplation on consciousness and contemplation on Dhamma objects. So the first four has to do with contemplation on the body. The second four on feeling, the third four on mindful consciousness, and the fourth four on Dhamma objects. So we'll come to them later. Now, since the first four methods are the most important for a beginner, for one who wants to practice mindfulness meditation, these four methods are treated in detail or explained in detail in this book, Visuddhimagga, as well as in other commentaries. So the text goes on and on until we come to the end. The description of development is complete in all respects. However, only if it is given in due course after a commentary on the text. So it is given here, introduced by a commentary on the first part of the text. First, the commentary explains the words. So first it gives the meaning of the words and some explanations pertaining to the meanings. And later, not today, but next week, we'll come to the method of development. So first, the commentator commented upon the text itself, and then described how to practice mindfulness of breathing meditation as a tranquility or serenity meditation. So now we will be doing the word commentary. Now, how developed bhikkhus, how practiced much is concentration through mindfulness of breathing? Here, in the first place, how is a question showing desire to explain in detail the development of concentration through mindfulness of breathing in its various forms? Developed bhikkhus, etc., is concentration through mindfulness of breathing. This shows the thing that is being asked about of out of desire to explain it in its various forms. That means Buddha first put a question, and this question is not expecting an answer from the listeners, but he wanted to give the answer himself. So first he asked a question and then he gave the answer. Now developed means aroused or increased. That means practice. Practice again and again. Concentration through mindfulness of breathing. Literally, breathing, mindfulness, concentration. That is the Pali word. Anapana sati kamathana. Samadhi. Anapana sati samadhi. So, anapana means breathing, sati means mindfulness, and samadhi means concentration. That means either concentration associated with mindfulness that discerns breathing, or it is concentration on mindfulness of breathing. Actually, they mean the same thing. Now, concentration is a mental factor, or mental state, and it is associated with another mental state, which is mindfulness. So, concentration, mindfulness, and there is consciousness. So, when we practice meditation, our consciousness is accompanied by concentration. That is, if our meditation is good, accompanied by concentration and mindfulness. And it is concentration on mindfulness of breathing. It's the same thing. Now, practice much means practice again and again. These are what explanations. Sometimes it looks strange in a translation. Sometimes they have to repeat the words because English or other language has no words for the original Pali words. As I said, Pali is rich in synonyms in some respect, and so they give one synonym after another when they explain something, and they are difficult to translate into another language. And both peaceful and sublime. Santo jiwa panito cha. Now, I think both is not correct here. There is a word EVA. Do you see the word EVA? Eva. So Eva means only. He translated Eva in another place as quiet. So quiet secluded from sensual pleasures, quite secluded from sense objects and so on. So here also we should say quite peaceful and quite sublime. So it is peaceful and sublime. It is peaceful only and sublime only. That is what is meant here. Peaceful only, not unpeaceful. Sublime only, not unsublime. And this is sometimes the word EVA. Eva is used just for emphasis.
So it could be very peaceful and very sublime.
No. Because want to emphasize it. It is really peaceful and not unpeaceful. Something like that. So the doer should be understood as governed by the word quite, not both. So we should correct it to both, quite instead of both. So by governed by the word quite. So quite peaceful, quite sublime. That means peaceful only, sublime only. And what is meant? Unlike foulness, which has a meditation subject. Now, foulness meditation is peaceful and sublime only by penetration. That means you practice foulness meditation, and when you get jhana's attainment, then that is peaceful and sublime. So at the attainment level, it is peaceful and it is sublime. But the object of the foulness meditation is not peaceful and not sublime, because you see the corpses, dead body. So they are gross. So unlike foulness, which as a meditation subject is peaceful and sublime only by penetration, but is neither peaceful nor sublime in its object, since its object in the learning stage is gross, and after that its object is repulsiveness. Unlike that, it is not unpeaceful or unsublime in any way, but on the contrary, it is peaceful, still, and quiet. Both on account of the peacefulness of its object and on account of the peacefulness of that one of its factors called penetration. That means the object itself is peaceful and the attainment also is peaceful, because it is a breath, so it is not gross, it is peaceful. So the breath itself as an object is peaceful and sublime, and when you get attainment, that is also peaceful and sublime. It is sublime, something one cannot have enough of. That is the translation, meaning of the word in Pali, panita. We use the word panito above. At the beginning of paragraph 148, panito. So the word panito is usually translated as sublime, but its literal meaning, its meaning is that which cannot have, something we cannot have enough of. That means we want to practice it again and again, and we are not satiated with it. So that is what is meant here. Both on account of its sublimeness of its object and on account of the sublimeness of the aforesaid factor, that means penetration. Hence it is called peaceful and sublime. So it is peaceful only and not unpeaceful, sublime only and not unsublime. That is what is meant here. It is an unadulterated blissful abiding. That means it has no adulteration, thus it is unadulterated. It is unalloyed, unmixed, particular, special. Here it is not a question of peacefulness to be reached through preliminary work as with kasinas, or through access as with foulness, for instance. Now, in order to get peacefulness with kasina meditation or foulness meditation, you have to do some work before you get peacefulness. See, with kasina meditation, you have to prepare a kasina, and then and go to a place and sit and meditate. And with faultless meditation also, you have to look at the corpse and so on. Only after that, say, you get some kind of unification of mind, and so you get peacefulness then. But it is not like that, like those meditation. It is peaceful and sublime in its own individual essence too, starting with the very first attention given to it. The moment you sit down and practice meditation on breathing, you are peaceful. But some say that it is unadulterated because it is unalloyed, possessed of nutritive value, and sweet in its individual essence too. So it should be understood to be unadulterated and a blissful abiding, since it leads to the obtaining of bodily and mental bliss. That means bodily and mental peacefulness with every moment of absorption. Now, but some say, there's a footnote. Some is said with reference to the inmates of the Uttara, northern monastery in Anuradhapura. Historically, the commentaries we now use were written at a monastery called the Great Monastery in Anuradhapura in Sri Lanka. And at one time, some monks went away from the Great Monastery, which was the central place of learning at that time for monks. So they divided themselves from Great Monastery, and they founded another two monasteries. One is to the north of the Great Monastery, and one is, I think, to the east of the Great Monastery. The large stupas can still be seen in Anuradhapura. So here, Northern Monastery means actually the monastery called Abhayagiri. It is not known as Northern Monastery, actually. Northern Monastery is not its name. But since that monastery is situated in the north of the Great Monastery, it is referred to here in the sub-commentary as Northern Monastery. Actually, it is Abhayagiri. And they have some different opinions about teachings in some cases, in some places. So they do not conform to the tradition handed down or accepted at the Great Monastery. So those who live in the Northern Monastery or Abhayagiri Monastery thought here in this way. Just a little bit different, not too much. Now, as soon as they arise, the Pali word here means, I don't think it is not as soon as, it is like saying each and everyone that arises. Because in Pali, the word is repeated. That means something that arises and arises. Something like that. So it means each and every thought that arises. And here, arise does not mean that it really arises, but it is in a latent state. There is potential for these unwholesome or unprofitable thoughts to arise. And so, it is explained by whenever they are not suppressed. That means there are three kinds of abandoning unwholesome states. The first one is by substitution. That means substituting unwholesome with wholesome. That means when you have wholesome thoughts, you do not have unwholesome thoughts. So that is called abandoning by substitution. But we say it momentary abandoning. Just for one moment, you may abandon that. The next one is abandoning by suppression or temporary abandoning. In this case, the abandoning lasts longer than the first one. And the last one is totally cutting off, total eradication. That is the last abandoning. So there are three kinds of abandoning. And here, what is meant is the second abandoning, abandoning by suppression. So this meditation can banish or abandon the unprofitable thoughts as they arise, means not that they really arise, but they have the potential to arise. So by the practice of meditation, their arising is blocked. They are not given chance to arise. So that is what is meant here. Because when unwholesome thoughts has arisen in us, then it has arisen, and we cannot do anything about that. So before arising, we do not let it arise. So that is what is meant here. Although the word arise is used, it banishes at once. It banishes, suppresses at that very moment. Stills, it thoroughly calms, or else, when eventually brought to fulfillment by the noble path, it cuts off because of partaking of penetration. It tranquilizes. That's what is meant. Now this, or else, and the following mean the total cutting off abandonment. Here, a person reaches the noble path. And so at the moment of noble path, he is able to eradicate or cut off mental defilements or unprofitable thoughts altogether. So here it is meant the total cutting off. In brief, however, the meaning here is this: because in what way, in what manner, by what system is concentration through mindfulness of breathing developed, in what way it is practiced much, that is both peaceful and as soon as they arise. Now here, a bhikkhu means bhikkhus in this dispensation, a bhikkhu, a monk. Now in this book, in this path of purification, the commentator did not say anything more about the word bhikkhu. But in another commentary, in the commentary to the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, the Sutta on Foundations of Mindfulness, it is stated that bhikkhu here means not necessarily an ordained monk, but anybody who practices mindfulness meditation, anybody who follows the advice of the Buddha, who practices the teachings of the Buddha, can be called a bhikkhu. So in that case, a bhikkhu does not necessarily mean an ordained monk. Anybody who practices meditation can be called a bhikkhu. But since this book is for bhikkhus, for monks, the commentator doesn't say anything about it. Now it is when people read suttas and they see always Buddha addressing monks, they feel they are left out, and so they are not satisfied with that. They are not, what you call, they do not like that. Buddha addressing monks only and not lay people. But you know, Buddha lives with monks, and so when he talked to mostly to monks. But that does not mean that lay people are left out, or non-monks are left out. So here, a bhikkhu means bhikkhu in this dispensation, a bhikkhu. So here it is a monk. But anybody who practices meditation, who follows the teachings of the Buddha, can be called a monk. So for this, what here signifies the Buddha's dispensation as the prerequisite for a person to produce concentration through mindfulness or breathing and all this mode and so on. So here means this dispensation, and that is in Buddhism. And it is said that only in Buddhism can you find these four foundations of mindfulness and also four persons who are enlightened. So, two lines down, for this is said, because only here is there an ascetic. Here is second ascetic, here is third ascetic, here is fourth ascetic. They mean the stream winner, once returner, non-returner, and arahant. Other dispensations are devoid of ascetics. That means there are no enlightened persons in other dispensations. That is why it was said above in this dispensation in Bhikkhu. Now, gone to the forest or to an empty place. So, this verse shows an appropriate or suitable place for meditation. Gone to the forest. And then it describes the monk's mind as unruly, wild, and it gives a simile of a calf tied with a rope to a strong post. So, in the same way, we tie our mind to the strong post of breathing with the rope of mindfulness. So, mindfulness is like a rope, and breathing in and out is like a post. And our mind is like the calf. So we try to keep our mind on the object by mindfulness. And then paragraph 155, or alternatively, this mindfulness of breathing as a meditation subject, which is foremost among the various meditation subjects of all Buddhas, some Vajjhika Buddhas and some Buddhas disciples. These the word some in square brackets are taken from the sub-commentary. Now, it is said that all Buddhas practice mindfulness of breathing meditation. And they all practice mindfulness of breathing meditation and got jhanas, and then they went on over to vipassana after attaining jhana. But for Vajjhika Buddhas and the other disciples, it may not be breathing meditation. So for some it may be breathing meditation, but for others it may not be breathing meditation. There are other kinds of meditation too. But all, it is said in the books that all Buddhas practice breathing meditation. If you read some suttas in the middle length sayings, you'll find Buddha relating his practice to a prince. And in that sutta he said he practiced first the breathing meditation, and then he got first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, and then he got the supernormal knowledge of remembering past lives, and then seeing people dying from one life and being reborn in another. And only after that he dwelt on the dependent origination, practicing vipassana on each of the 12 planes. And he gained enlightenment. So it is said that all Buddhas practice breathing meditation, but not all Vajjhika Buddhas and Buddhas disciples. That is why some, the word some, are inserted here before Vajjhika Buddhas and Buddhas disciples. As a basis for attaining distinction means enlightenment. And it is not easy to develop without leaving the neighborhood of villages which resound with the noises of women, men, elephants, horses, etc. So we need to go to a place where we don't have such noises. Noise being a thorn to jhana. Actually, thorn to first jhana. So noise is a thorn to jhana. Whereas in the forest, away from a village, a meditator can at least is said about discerning this meditation and so on. So a forest is a suitable place for meditation, and this meditation is difficult to practice, and so we need quietness. And then the author explained with a simile that Blessed One is like a master of art of building and so on. These passages are not difficult to understand. So let's go to the next page. Paragraph 158. Gone to the forest is gone to any kind of forest possessing the bliss of seclusion among the kinds of forests characterized thus. Having gone out beyond the boundary post, all that is forest. Now, when we say forest, there are at least two definitions given in Abhidhamma and given in Vinaya. The first one is from Abhidhamma. So in the Abhidhamma it is said that having gone out beyond the boundary post, there are gate posts of the villages. So outside the gate post is called a forest. It may be very close to the village, but still it is called a forest. So according to that definition, the outside the village is called a forest. But there is another definition in Vinaya, and that is a forest abode is 500 bow length distance. That means at least, we should put at least there. He left out the word. A forest abode is at least 500 bow length distance. One bow length is said to be 4 cubits, so that's said to be 6 feet. So 500 multiplied by 6, 3,000. So in order for a place to be called a forest, it must be about 3,000 feet away from the human, villages or towns or cities. So there is difference between a forest described in or explained in Abhidhamma and explained in Vinaya. We have come across this in the second chapter.
Right.
Maybe you're thinking about it.
Right. I was thinking of the football fields away.
Oh.
3,000, that would be 10 football fields.
10 football fields?
I think so.
Oh. Mm.
300
feet on your feet. Yeah. Oh. 10 football fields. So it's a football field. To the root of a tree, gone to a vicinity of a tree, to an empty place, it is any place which is empty, secluded. And here he can be said to have gone to an empty place if he has gone to any of the remaining 7 kinds of abode. And they are given in the footnote. Now, sitting position. So, he then said, sits down, indicating a posture that is peaceful and tends neither to idleness nor to agitation. So, sitting position is the best for practice of meditation. Then he said, having folded his legs crosswise, etc., to show firmness in the sitting position, easy occurrence of the in-breath and out-breath, when you sit cross-legged and when your body is straight, then your breathing is easy. So, easy occurrence of the in-breath and out-breath and the means for discerning the object. So when your breathing is going smoothly, then you can concentrate on it easily. Here in crosswise is the sitting position with the thighs fully locked. So it doesn't say that it is a lotus position or whatever. But I think it means a lotus position. Because your thighs fully locked means a lotus position. And most of the Buddha images you see are in the lotus position. Full lotus. So it may mean full lotus position here. Folded, having locked. Set his body erect, having placed the upper part of the body erect with the 18 backbones resting end to end. That means one over the other. For when he is seated in like this, his skin, flesh and sinews are not twisted, and so the feelings that would arise, feelings means pain. Painful feelings that would arise moment by moment if they were twisted, do not arise. That being so, his mind becomes unified and so on. So sitting position is recommended. And said to be best for meditation. Establish mindfulness in front of him. I mean, in front of him means towards the object. Establishing mindfulness towards the object, not towards him. not in front of him, actually. So having placed mindfulness facing the meditation subject, that means towards the meditation subject, or alternatively, the meaning can be treated here too according to the method of explanation given in the Patisambhida. Now, this book, Patisambhida, will be quoted many times in this Visuddhi Magga. And this book is said to be preached by the Venerable Sariputta. Although it is included in the Sutta Pitaka, although it is included as among the words of the Buddha, it actually was taught by Venerable Sariputta.
So it's not in the Abhidhamma Pitaka?
Oh no, it's not in Abhidhamma. It's included in Sutta Pitaka. But I just read today in one book, Geiger's Pali Literature and Language. And there he said it is more like Abhidhamma than Soda. But that is not quite so. It looked like Soda. But its language is different. I mean, the usage is a little different from the usage in the commentaries. Although it is treated as a commentary on some of the Buddha's teachings. And Venerable Buddhaghosa, the author of the Path of Purification, had great respect for this book. So he always quoted from this book whenever there's quotation to be made.
It is translated in English?
Yes, I think recently a translation has come out. So, according to that book, the phrase here means making mindfulness thoroughly controlled and get out of opposition. Now here it's called outlet. What is outlet? Outlet means something or some hole or some door you go through, something like that. But here, it does not mean an outlet, but outgoing, something like that. Getting out of. Here, mindfulness is described here. So, mindfulness must be well controlled, and it must be getting out of opposition. Opposition here means the forgetfulness. So, mindfulness must be strong, and it must get out of forgetfulness. So, making mindfulness thoroughly controlled and get out of opposition. That is what is meant here. And then, breathing in long and breathing out long. So, first commentary, what commentary continued? Tetrad. There is first set of four methods of breathing meditation. And here, breathing long and breathing short can be understood by way of extent. So, those who have big or long bodies for such beings, the breathing in and out may be long. And for small animals, for insects, they may be very short. But with regard to human beings, we can understand by way of time. So sometimes our breathing is long and sometimes our breathing is short. Short and long and short in time. Because human beings are more or less of the same size. So we cannot say that you have a longer extent of the path of breathing in and out. Now, paragraph 164, Asasa is the wind issuing out. Pasasa is the wind entering in. It's said in the Vinaya commentary. But in the Sotanta commentaries, it is given in the opposite sense. So the, in Vinaya commentary, asasa is what?
Out-breath.
And pasasa is in-breath. But in Sotanta commentaries, asasa is in-breath. And pasasa is out-breath. Herein, when any infant comes out of the mother's womb, first the wind from within goes out, and subsequently the wind from without enters in with the first dust, strikes the palate, and is extinguished with the infant sneezing. Does the infant sneeze after being born? I don't know. It's okay. Now, now the commentary leaves us without telling us. Which is to be preferred, right?
Yeah.
Then what? Do we take asasa as out-breath or in-breath? Mm. Now, that is what I call familiarity with the tradition or with the manner of commentators. Now, whenever a commentator gives two or more different opinions, the one he put last is the one he preferred. We must understand that. If he doesn't say anything, then we must take that he preferred the last one. And there is another proof of, say, atsasa being in-breath and pasasa being out-breath, that we'll find on page 302. And then page 292, paragraph 167. Now this bhikkhu's knows, I breathe in, I breathe out long, while breathing in and breathing out long in 9 ways. And the development of the foundation of mindfulness consisting in contemplation of the body should be understood to be perfected in one aspect and in who knows thus, according as it is said in the Pratisambhita and the quotation of Pratisambhita.
Now, why is there a question mark here? On 168, the second, I breathe in long, breathing out long, does he know I breathe out long?
How does he know? How, breathing in long, does he know? I breathe in long.
How
breathe in long, does... How does he know I breathe in long, breathing out long? And how does he know I breathe out long, breathing out long? What's that?
There's a question mark there.
Yeah.
The whole sentence.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
It's all encapsulated in what I see. That's
yes.
The sentence.
Okay. Breathe in long and breathe out as an extent and so on.
I understand.
Now, whenever I see footnotes in small print, I was afraid. Because these are from the sub-commentary. Sub-commentary is more difficult to understand than the commentary itself. And so I was afraid that he might make some mistakes in translating, and he did make mistakes. I cannot go into details about this, but one thing is, so footnote 46. So let's say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. About eight lines above, I mean from the bottom. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. He said, but some say. Now, that should be in front of. You go to two lines above, the mind turns away, right? Mm-hmm. And then the mind turns away from the breath. So some say should be there. Some say that the mind turns away from the breath which have reached the point at which their manifestation needs investigating owing to their gradually increasing subtlety. That is what the other people say. But the truth is that when the in-breath and out-breath have reached a subtler state owing to the influence of meditation, and the counterpart sign has arisen.